is Nightline.
Tonight, vibing and thriving on TikTok. Influencers celebrating their disabilities. Shining a light on those often overlooked.
People ask, like, where's this community been this whole time? Like, right here, the whole time.
And getting real on what privilege and inclusivity look like. Plus, NFL dreams.
Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
From the latest hopefuls scoring big on draft night tonight to the women changing the game on and off a field dominated by men. Why these Trailblazers are in a league of their own. Thank you for joining us. Tonight, the influencers breaking barriers for the disability community, creating their own unique space on TikTok and challenging the way the world sees them. Here's Nightline's Ashin Singh.
It's here on her family farm in Franklinville, New Jersey, where Mackenzie Trush comes alive.
Growing up here has been such a really fun, unique way to grow up.
It's one big, happy family.
These are my pets and, like, my family.
Mackenzie's upbringing has been unique in more ways than one. She was born with a rare form of dwarfism called SEMD, one of only 175 documented cases in history. She's had to find ways to adapt her whole life, competing in equestrian shows. And now, the aspiring actress is making her own path on social media.
Now, I'm no yogi, but I think that was pretty good.
To go from growing up on a farm to this past year, you kind of turned into a pretty big TikTok star.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a really welcome, fun change.
What's that like for you?
So, like, quarantine started, I was like, now is the time to do the thing I always say I'm going to do, which is make a TikTok and, like, post, like, kind of educational but fun, like, videos. And so I just made one. I felt silly posting it, and then I woke up the next day to a couple thousand views on my first video ever, and it's been like a roller coaster ever since.
And Mackenzie isn't alone. For what seems like the first time, disabled content creators have a genuine audience like never before.
My largest video has over 200 million views. We thought, oh, there's something to this. This is an audience that we haven't tapped into before.
Using the app TikTok, influencers ranging in all types of disabilities have tapped into a younger and more eager audience.
It's really exciting to see, like, a second generation of online disability advocates on TikTok. They are so passionate and so well-versed.
Now, disabled creators are using the app to tell their stories in their own words. They're dissecting privilege within a media landscape that's otherwise ignored them.
Having access to other disabled people telling stories in a variety of platforms is community building.
Oftentimes, society tries to put us in a box. For me, it was, see yourself as non-disabled. Don't be gay. Everything changed for me when I leaned into my disability, came out as gay, and started finding happiness in my own way.
I'm down here.
Spencer West has been a star long before TikTok.
I wanted to share some words with you that help describe my journey and who I am.
A YouTuber and inspirational speaker, Spencer gives audiences a sense of what it's like to live life with no legs.
But what does that mean? Time for an anatomy lesson. This stuff here, didn't touch it. This stuff here, didn't touch it. I hope that clears up any confusion. Thank you.
He's built a following and even made a famous friend along the way. Demi Lovato. But it wasn't until Spencer got on TikTok that things took off.
I go to the bathroom just like everyone else!
Go. Now with 3 million followers, he's using his space to educate. But he also wants audiences to know that it's okay to be proud of your disability.
I grew up in the 80s and early 90s, and, you know, at that time, to be seen as disabled was sort of taboo. You wanted to be seen just like everyone else, and that your disability didn't define you or limit you in those ways. And now we're sort of learning, you know, that's a terrible way to think, and that's like, I'm proud to have a disability, and it is a part of me.
Imani Barberin couldn't agree more.
I don't have a problem with being disabled. You have a problem with me being disabled. One of those things is a problem, and it sounds like it's yours.
She's an activist and a writer who focuses on the intersection of race and disability.
We represent so many different faiths, political backgrounds, and I wish that we would no longer be seen as a monolith.
If I'm gonna pull up Imani's TikTok page, what can I expect?
The truth. You can expect the truth. I think my videos are very much so geared towards not really sugarcoating disability.
40% of prisoners have a disability.
Her videos offer an uncompromisingly honest take on the reality of life as a Black woman with cerebral palsy.
If we're talking about white supremacy within the disability community, then we're calling you out.
Imani is ready for a change in the way society represents both Black and disabled people.
Oh my God, I am so glad that you agree. We should have way more disabled people in media, in film, in TV, in all of it. No, not you. But I thought you just said, excuse me, I have no more time for this. I am about to profit off of representations that will create stereotypes that you will have to live by without including you at all. In terms of the media representations of disability, it's all about making non-disabled people feel better about themselves by comparison. Our bodies are a litmus test for how much worse yours could be and how much more grateful you should be because you could be us. And I really hope Black and brown disabled people see themselves reflected on social media at least. We need to be seen by the public and by society because we exist and we are here.
Representation of disabled people in Hollywood and the media, or lack thereof, is a glaring problem when you look at the numbers. While 26% of the adult population in the United States is living with a disability, a study done on the top 100 grossing films of 2019 found that only 2.3% of speaking characters had a disability.
If film is the only place that you can access or you have seen a disabled person, then that story becomes the only narrative that you learn about. It carries so much more weight in shaping your understanding of what disability might be like.
When disability appears in a story, it always serves a function.
Dr. Allison Patsavis co-produced the film Code of the Freaks, an in-depth exploration of how movies treat disability on screen.
Stories are everywhere, and when Hollywood gets a hold of our stories, they want to shove it into these really set kind of stereotypical narratives.
RJ, look right here.
There are more nuanced roles for disabled actors. RJ Mitty, who has cerebral palsy, playing Walt Jr. on Breaking Bad.
Are they too tight? Because you don't want to get them if they're too tight.
They're pretty short.
She's not my vibe.
You're racist.
And Steve Wei, who lives with muscular dystrophy, on the Hulu comedy show Rami.
You don't really see people like me on television, or if you see someone who is supposed to be me, they don't look like me. And their stories are not truly what we go through.
Back on the farm in Jersey, there's still work to be done. And Mackenzie's made a promise to herself that she won't take roles that make her disability a punchline.
As I got older and was offered roles in like commercials, but like you're gonna be playing an elf. And it was just portraying that stereotype even further. It's not helping, that's hurting the community. I would not be able to sleep knowing that I've contributed to that. And I know I'm privileged to be able to say that I can say no to that. I'm like proud of my content. I like to tell myself that maybe somewhere in the back of their mind, the video will stick with them.
It's just a 15-second video, but these creators are making sure that with each TikTok, they're forging a more inclusive future for not just the disabled community, but for everyone.
It's always funny when people ask, like, where's this community been this whole time? Like, right here, the whole time. We've been here the whole time. And I think it's our time. I really do.
Our thanks to Ush. Coming up, changing the NFL. Why this group of women is in a league of their own.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight marks the start of this year's NFL draft. For the next few days, the focus is on young men who've dreamed of joining the big league for years. But there's also a group of women who are slowly changing the face of pro football. Here's ABC's Ariel Reshef.
It's pro day at Oklahoma State University. NFL dreams are on display. The last chance for these NFL hopefuls to show off their skills before the draft. A moment that can be life-changing. In this nearly $16 billion industry, men dominate on and off the field. But on this day, one woman is taking the lead. NFL agent Kelly Masters watching from the sidelines as her client NFL prospect Tylan Wallace completes his drills.
He is one of the most exciting and prolific wide receivers in this draft class. I am excited about his future.
Overall, started really strong. I think I fell off a little bit towards the end, but overall, I think it's really good.
He is going to make an incredible transition to the NFL.
Kelly is one of a growing number of female power players in the league. There are 400 licensed agents in the NFL. Just 34 are women.
But it never crossed my mind that women didn't become sports agents. And when I was first confronted by that, by a male agent who told me why women didn't belong in the industry, I thought that was the craziest thing I'd ever heard.
15 years later, Kelly has represented dozens of clients and has her own agency.
In those early years when there were just two or three women that were representing NFL players, I felt like I spent a lot of time defending myself, a lot of time trying to explain why a woman could do this.
And that male agent who told her off?
I have now become friends with that agent. We have actually co-represented players together in the years since then. Yeah, I give him a little grief for that now.
Last year was a banner year for women in football. At Super Bowl 55, Lori Locust and Maral Javedifair helped coach Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to victory.
We didn't win the Super Bowl because just Lo and I are here. It's a collective team, a collective approach, and every single person in the organization matters.
While referee Sarah Thomas officiated on the field. Impressive firsts, years in the making.
This is not a career where you decide on a Thursday that you want to be a coach in the NFL and next Tuesday you're on the field.
When I started officiating, the peewee level, the little jamborees on Saturday mornings and the JV games and the varsity high school games, I just fell in love with that.
No one's path to the NFL is easy, but for women, there's an added challenge to an already uphill battle in this highly competitive arena.
When I first got into officiating, of course, I had the largest learning curve. I never had played the sport.
Today, there are only 8 female coaches in the league out of nearly 800. And up until this spring, when Maya Chaka was added to the NFL's roster for the 2020 season, Thomas was the only female referee. Tampa's Super Bowl win comes after a concerted effort to seek out minority and female talent by head coach Bruce Arians, who spoke about his initiative at the 2019 NFL annual league meeting.
They're good fits for what we need. And the fact that their gender is different, who gives a shit? I mean, they're good coaches.
Lori as an assistant defensive line coach and Marl as an assistant strength and conditioning coach.
There's just such a high and utmost respect that we've both gotten from our players.
It's not to diminish the fact that we're women. Clearly, we're women. But you assume a role of coach, and that shouldn't have a label or a specific gender attached to it. It's just who we are.
For Lori, Sarah, and Kelly, shattering gridiron glass ceilings is a second act.
My job before this was 25 years of insurance.
I was in pharmaceutical sales for a long time.
I practiced civil litigation.
An organized football team, a women's football team, came to Harrisburg. I was at a point in my life with, you know, two kids and a full-time job, and I decided that why not give it a try.
And we had been in this one church basketball league, and I got kicked out of that church league because I was a female. When I asked my brother, I was like, what are you doing tonight? And he said he was going to a football officials meeting. And I just said, can girls do that? And he said, I guess so, sis, be there at 6 and don't be late.
Unlike the other women, Tampa Bay's Marl, known as MJ, began her coaching career early after playing college basketball.
I tore my ACL, and it was a devastating injury for me. And that was the time when I realized I always wanted to be on the sidelines and give other athletes the same opportunity that I had at getting back to their game and getting back to their sport.
Turning a roadblock into a building block, MJ eventually landed a job in 2019 with the Buccaneers.
Prior to accepting the job with Tampa Bay, I had received an offer from another sports organization, and it just didn't fit right, and I didn't have another option after I turned it down. But to me, I think I made one of the best decisions and hardest decisions of my life.
That decision paid off tenfold on February 7th this year at the Super Bowl. It was a historic moment.
If we bumped into each other, it was just because I was doing my duties and they were doing their duties. And I believe that maybe Lolo and I maybe a bump fist, but I didn't see MJ till after the game. It speaks volumes to their caliber as coaches, not as female coaches, but they're doing a job.
Yeah, I think Sarah looked over during the game and said hello, but I was so locked in. I think I may have ignored her by accident until later.
The Buccaneers have the most diverse staff in the NFL, a formula that's clearly been proven to work.
This is a production-based business. You don't win, you're not in. I don't think that you can just throw people at a problem or throw people on a staff and expect it to have the chemistry like we have here. It was like 13 years for me before I got to this point of coaching. And I think sometimes the media glamorizes the end result so much. It's like somebody waved a magic wand and all of a sudden there's women coaches. But it does a disservice to show people what it really takes to get to this level.
The team's initiative to get more women in the game is a long play that includes fostering growth beginning as early as high school.
The Bucks Foundation has committed $250,000 to a girls' football scholarship. Flag football in Florida is huge. It's a varsity sport.
For this group of women, true progress will mean their milestones become the last.
I look forward to the day that it isn't newsworthy.
I was 40 years old when I pivoted into this career, so it's never too late to give something that you truly believe in and you truly have a passion for a chance.
I think we'll have a female commissioner someday, and to me, it won't be a surprise.
I am just ready for the day that girls don't have to ask, can girls do that? They just know it's already been done. There's not the first to happen again.
Our thanks to Ariel. And finally tonight, The Voice. Third grader DeCorey Johnson beginning the school day with a jaw-dropping rendition of the national anthem, regularly leading the morning announcements at Bates Elementary in Louisville, Kentucky. DeCorey's talent spreading far beyond the classroom, including his take on Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You. Just 9 years old and already hitting all the high notes. 9 years old. Bravo, young king. That's Nightline for this evening. We'll see you right back here tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.